Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
It's Gary Parrish. Welcome back. CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball Podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting, dodo birds, leaky black. Eye on College Basketball Podcast is presented by Jersey Mike's. Jersey Mike's a sub above. Matt Norlander is here with me. If you're watching on YouTube, be Brandon Davies. Smash the like button. You have consent. Don't forget while you're here to also subscribe to the College Basketball, CBS Sports College Basketball YouTube channel. Assuming you haven't done that already, I hope you have. Let's get into it. West Coast Conference title game was the main attraction on Tuesday night of championship week. Per usual, it was St. Mary's Gonzaga. Per usual, final score, Gale 69, Zag 60, per usual, at least this year. St. Mary's finishes 2-1 against Gonzaga on the season. They are the West Coast Conference regular season champ, West Coast Conference tournament champ for just the third time in the same year in history. Shouts to Patty Mills, Jock Landale, Matthew Dellavedova, Omar Samhan. Dead leg, the Zags led 52-51 with about 7:20 left. From there, St. Mary's closed 18-8 run, won it by 9. Can I get your thoughts on St. Mary's heading to the NCAA tournament on a high note?
Yeah. Impressive showing. I didn't think that it would go like that. We got a mostly good game. St. Mary's took control at the end, and I thought we were going to get a battle down to the final minute. We didn't get that, and I think maybe important for St. Mary's moving forward. Maybe we'll see. Matchups matter, obviously, but to play that definitively, Mitchell Saxon showing up in a way that he has not in every game they've needed him to against the biggest opponents this season. It just hasn't been that case. But here against Gonzaga in a rubber match situation, for what feels like the 50th time these two teams have met in a WCC championship game or in the tournament there, highly impressive for Saxon to be that strong. 19 points, 15 rebounds, wasn't ultra efficient from the field, but if you watch the game, him and Mahaney showed up big time, and they were able to, you know, keep Ben Gregg, Nolan Hickman from having impactful games. Watson, I thought Watson was what you'd want from him in a game like that for Gonzaga. And I thought that Graham Ike missed some opportunities. He had some foul trouble there. Big picture on this, you know, Gonzaga has made 8 straight Sweet 16s. And we'll see where the Zags. I think the Zags are going to be in an 8-9 game. I do, GP. So that'll be interesting and tricky. And once we get to the bracket, it'll be fascinating to see if they are in the 8-9, which one they are paired against. And so St. Mary's, though, this is its 10th NCAA tournament under Randy Bennett, but it made it last year. It won a game, knocked out round 2. 2 years ago, won a game, knocked out round 2. Was a first round exit in 2019. A second round exit in 2017. First round in 2013, first round in 2012. Last time it broke through to the Sweet 16 was 2010. And that was the aforementioned Omar Samhan team. That was the team that was a 10 seed and upset 2 seed Villanova. Matthew Dellavedova on that team. Mickey McConnell, really good St. Mary's team. Really one of among the 2 or 3 best that I think Randy Bennett's ever had. I think this group has a healthy chance to be the first since then to make a Sweet 16 run. I wouldn't guarantee it. I think St. Mary's will either be like the best 7 or on the 6 line, and it'll be matchup dependent, but it is impressive to see how this group went from preseason top 25 team entering a season with expectations nearly as high or higher than it's ever had before. It goes 3-5, and since then, it's only lost twice. I mean, it took a weird loss at home to Missouri State 2 days before Christmas, and then obviously Gonzaga went right into the UCUP and absolutely just blew the doors off of St. Mary's. But they come back, they beat Santa Clara, they get to Gonzaga, they're 26-7, they're going in. I was impressed by the performance and how they did not allow Gonzaga to make it a game closing out in the final minutes.
You mentioned it was felt like the millionth time that these two teams have played in the West Coast Conference Tournament Final. It did feel that way. It's actually the 14th, and that is tied for most in history in terms of two teams playing each other in a conference championship game. Trivia time, and I bet you can get it. What other two teams have also played in a tournament, a conference tournament championship game 14 different times?
Is it the one that we think is going to be a 15th time in 4 days from now? And the two schools separated by, you know, about 9 miles as the crow flies?
Yeah, by 11, though, if you want to get in a vehicle. It is Duke Carolina. They've played 14 times in the ACC tournament title game. St. Mary's Gonzaga, 14 times in the WCC tournament title game. But what's interesting is that Duke UNC's, that goes all the way back to 1940. That was the first time they ever played in an ACC tournament title game, 1940. And they've done it 13 times since then. The Gonzaga St. Mary stuff only dates back to 2004. And it's been 14 times since 2004. So they've in other words, the Zags and the Gales have met the WCC tournament title game 14 times in the past 21 years. Some of that's the byproduct of them getting pushed right into the semifinals in many years, given that they typically finish 1-2 in the league. But either way, just you could almost go ahead and book it. Tuesday night of championship week, what do we watch it every year? It's probably Gonzaga, St. Mary's. And if it ain't Gonzaga, St. Mary's, it's Gonzaga against somebody. St. Mary's, listen, I think you've got the seeding about right. You know, maybe a 6, maybe a 7, somewhere in that range. If as long as they don't get matched up somehow, some way against, say, my alma mater, Purdue, or my other alma mater, Utah State, I really might take St. Mary's to end up in the Sweet 16. How about this? You mentioned they took those two quad three losses early. Both of them before Christmas, Weber State, Missouri State. So they start the season terribly. They were, but resume stuff now, they're 8-5 in the first two quadrants, 5 quadrant one wins. That's good. The 2 quadrant three losses is the difference probably between them being something like a top 4 seed and maybe being like a 6 or a 7 on Selection Sunday. But how about this? So they start the season, St. Mary's 3-5. They end up 8-6 following the loss to Missouri State. Since that loss to Missouri State, 18-1. And where do you think they're at Torvik, if you sort it from the day after the loss to Missouri State through today?
All right, that's a good one. I'll take a guess, but I did look up going into this game. I looked up Gonzaga, and since February 1, Gonzaga was 10th in the country per Torvik. I'll say, I mean, that is such an impressive record. Hold on. Since the loss to Missouri State, just to be clear. So since December 24th?
I believe the loss to Missouri State. I don't have it right in front of me. I think it was December 23rd. I start the data on December 24th and run it all the way through today.
Give me the Gales number 4 in the country since December 24th.
8th.
Oh, okay. Not quite as good. Gave him too much credit. Okay.
But 8th. 8th. Like if you were looking, and I wrote this in the top 25 and 1 this morning, if you were looking for a team that is probably going to be underseeded relative to the way it's been playing basketball for like the past 3 months, St. Mary's is a good candidate for that position.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I'll give them serious consideration to be a second weekend team. It will be, in my opinion, it will be matchup dependent. As usual, St. Mary's is a low tempo team, you know, 62, 63 possessions per game. You do that, you're going to find yourself in more games than not where you look up, there's 2 minutes to go and it's, you know, 56-54. So that is something that will be working against it. But, you know, a well-rounded team, Randy Bennett, whose name you may or may not see. I don't think he's going to leave St. Mary's, but, you know, depending on, you know, there's been some speculation about, like, you know, would Washington finally try and get this guy away? He's been offered the Cal job like 3 times before, has turned it down. We obviously talk about Mark Few so much and what Gonzaga has done, and Randy Bennett has gotten some attention and credit for it. But the morning after winning, the auto bid and getting a rare WCC conference tournament championship, rare relative to obviously Gonzaga. Just more credit and praise to be heaped on Bennett, because, you know, he is coaching and operating in the shadow of Gonzaga. I have not been to St. Mary's before, but I have talked to enough people that have been there, both the, you know, coaching games against the program. I've talked to Randy before about this, and just people that know the sport. And that is a mid-major program. Like the constraints under which he has operated St. Mary's going on now 25 years, and to continue to just be a, not just a 20-win program. No. Way more often than not, this is a 25-plus win program in the WCC, and to continue to thrive is so impressive there. This is going to be, it will basically be the sixth time in seven seasons that St. Mary's has a tournament level program. They would have gone in 2020 if there wasn't a tournament there. And it's been practically, you know, like clockwork that they've been in the tournament every year since 2017. The only years they didn't was 2018, when I know we'd killed them for their non-con schedule, and that's why they didn't get in. The team won 28 games in the regular season, tied a record for the most wins for any team not to get in at large. And then there was the COVID altered year in 2021, where it was COVID altered. Like they were 14-10 and it was whatever. But all praise and credit to Randy Bennett. Yeah, I'll say it. You know what? I'm going to say it right now, Parrish. You don't want to see this team in your bracket. You don't want to see them. That's all.
What percentage of teams where somebody says you don't want to see them in your bracket actually qualifies as a team you wouldn't want to see in your tab, huh?
I'll say 43. Sometimes it's true. Do I want to see Kentucky in my bracket? No. Do I want to see Houston? No. But those are the obvious teams, and no one ever says it about those teams. You got to be like a 5 seed at absolute best for someone to invoke that about your team, because I guarantee you no one wants to see UConn in their bracket. I promise you that. But no one's going to say that about UConn. You won't find that hard-hitting commentary anywhere but right here on the Ion College Basketball Podcast.
It's just sometimes you'll see like a team ranked 147th in the net win an auto bid, and somebody's like, you don't want to see them in your bracket. And I'm like, I'd love to see them in my bracket. I'll take them right now. First round game, put it anywhere. I'll
hear you. I hear. In fact, speaking of that, I mean, we got a few of those teams we got to talk about, don't we, GP? We got more auto bids in the field.
St. Mary's wasn't the only school to get an auto bid over the past couple of nights. We're going to run you through some other conference tournament champs next. But first, a word from our partners.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Congrats to St. Mary's, but we have had 6 other auto bids over the past couple of days. Let me run you through them, then we'll get Deadleg's thoughts. Sunbelt, James Madison beat Arkansas State 91-71 on Monday. In the Southern, Samford beat East Tennessee State 76-69 on Monday. Tuesday, CAA title game, Charleston beat Stony Brook 82-79. Horizon title game, Oakland beats Milwaukee 83-76. NEC title game, Wagner over Merrimack 54-47. Summit League, South Dakota State, Jackrabbits beat Denver 76-68. What's the most interesting thing from that group of the conference tournament champs? Norlander.
GP's wearing a Jackrabbits. Is that athleisure? What do we got here? Is that athleisure you're rocking right now, Parrish? What would you say that shirt is?
It's a Jackrabbit.
I know, but it looks like it's a sweatshirt, athleisure. I don't know what the
actual. Yeah, like if I was getting ready to maybe go for a run, I might put this on.
All right, cool, good deal. By the way, GP is doing the podcast from his Memphis studio. There is something different about your mic right now. I don't want to fiddle with it in real time and actually lose you there, but you still sound fine. But you do sound you sound a little bit different. So I don't know if you can tell that or not, but I'm letting you know in real time here.
I can't hear it on my end. Does this sound any better, what I'm doing right now?
It sounds the same, but a few people have noticed it in the chat here, and we did get rolling late because it was a busy day. On that note, I will say this. Of the teams that got in, JMU, 31-win team. Quickly, I'll go bang, bang, and then I'm going to talk on something that I know you want to talk about. JMU, 31-win team. I love the fact that we don't have to have a conversation about them. You know, will they get in or not? It would have been potentially a hard sell, although they would have had the most wins of any team to not get in at large if they didn't win the automatic bid. It's off the table. They win the Sun Belt. Samford, Bucky McMillan has an awesome story. He, if you're unaware, Samford is in Birmingham, Alabama. He has lived in Birmingham, Alabama his entire life. He was a high school coach for 14 years. He runs a style that is not duplicated at the men's D1 level anywhere. They press on literally every single possession, the entire full court. It does not matter. Really fun team. One of the smallest teams in the country. Bucky McMillan was kind of an off the radar hire when he got hired 4 years ago, and he's got Sam, not Stan, into the tournament. That's really cool. Charleston getting back. That game was on our network on Tuesday night, and what an awesome game that was. Pat Kelsey's Charleston team a year ago was plenty buzzed about because it was among the winningest programs in this last season when it got into the tournament. Was a trendy 12 over 5 pick. That didn't work out. And I liked what Kelsey said last night when he was talking to Amanda Guerra in the post game, where there was so much attention and noise around last season's team that this season's team got a little bit overshadowed. And I get that, and some of that's understandable because Charleston had a gaudy record and some notable games a season ago. But for this group, which has, you know, some players returned, but others didn't, to get to 27-7, win the CAA and play, you know, Stony Brook, credit to you guys, you know, 7 seed going in and just making it get to OT. That was awesome stuff. Wagner has like 6 dudes who can play. Right, you think Kansas has roster issues right now? Wagner is down to almost nobody, and they win the NEC championship by beating Merrimack, which is also tough because Merrimack last year won the conference tournament, wasn't eligible because of D1 transition. Now it gets to the title game. Joe Gallo's team couldn't pull it out. Good to see the Seahawks in for the first time in a long time. And then South Dakota State Jackrabbits, of course. Eric Henderson's a really, really good coach. I think he'll be a candidate for a few openings that might come up at, you know, a notch above SDSU. We'll see if he wants to leave or not. He's got a great, great thing going there. But I'm going to focus in on what I wrote about and stayed up writing until about 1:45 a.m. into Tuesday. And that is Greg Campy, Oakland's coach. They beat Milwaukee 83-76. I actually called Campy on Tuesday morning because I had told, so kind of like peek behind the curtain. Back months ago, preseason, I knew it was Campy's 40th season coaching, and Boeheim had retired, and he was the longest tenured coach. And we were talking about something or other, but I was like, listen, man, if you have a good season and if you make the tournament, I'm going to write a story about you, and this being 40 years. And Campy wanted nothing to do with it. He's like, I don't need it. And I have a column up this morning about him and the celebration and how his career started. And I really encourage you to go read it because he is, as I write in the story, everyone in the sport who knows Greg Campy loves Greg Campy. He did not seek, want any attention for the fact that he was the longest tenured coach, active coach, 40 years, one place. Oakland was D2 when he got there. He was 28 years old. I got all these details in there. Dick Bennett, Tony Bennett's dad, he was coaching at Wisconsin, Stevens Point. He got offered the Oakland job. He turned it down. Campy's 28 years old. The baseball coach at Oakland at the time had just gone and played a game at Oakland. He comes back from the trip. Campy's in his office. He's a punky kid. He goes, hey, there's a job opening at this place, Oakland. I think you should go for it. And Campy looks at him dead straight and goes, I'm not moving to California, man. Yeah, it's in Michigan, as you well know. And it was something that Campy said he's dealt with for 40 years because every recruit he tries to bring in, for better and for worse, they think he's in California. He's not. And for his team to be able to get this win, when I spoke with him on Tuesday morning before they actually, you know, pulled off the auto bid, he said, I don't need any more rings. I don't need any more trophies. This is all for my players. Like, I don't need anything when it comes to this kind of stuff. I'm just doing it because I love it. He's nowhere close to retiring. And then Trey Townsend goes out on Tuesday night, and this dude goes for the game of his life. 38 points, 11 rebounds, 5 assists. And if you watched the game and saw the coverage, you're aware of this. But if you didn't, let me tell you. Trey Townsend's mom and dad played basketball at Oakland. His dad played for Campy. He has been around the program since he was a baby, okay? And has gone to Campy's and Oakland's basketball summer camp every single year, as Campy told me, since he could literally put the ball in the hoop. And the idea that this guy, who has grown up around this program. And as Campy said, he wanted to play at Oakland. Kids in the state don't grow up wanting to play for Oakland. They want to play for Michigan State or Michigan. He wanted to play for Oakland on the biggest stage, biggest night. The fourth year junior has the game of his life, and he does it for his coach. It's incredible. There's a lot of other details. I don't want to give everything away from the story, but Campy deserves this. He had 532 unread text messages when he was, I said, listen, if you win, I might or might not call you, but I got a lot. But the way they won with Trey Townsend, I was like, all right, I got to call him. His phone's on do not disturb. So you know how if there's someone's on notification silent, you can notify anyway, GP? You can say notify anyway. If are you familiar with that on the iPhone?
That seems aggressive. Like if somebody doesn't want to be bothered, I'm not going to bother them.
Okay, well, it's Campy, and I knew he might be. Your mic's a little bit low, by the way. Might want to dial it up. So I alert him anyway. He picks up the phone. 532 unread text messages. He's at a dive bar with an old golfing buddy who surprised him, housing like nachos at close to midnight, celebrating on the outskirts of Indianapolis. I was like, okay, this is great, but why are you there? He's like, I haven't eaten in 3 days. This is the only place that's open, and I'm absolutely starving right now. So great, great, great stuff for Greg.
Why did he go 3 days without eating?
He was locked. I said, did you really not eat anything for 3 days? He said, I had an oatmeal cookie this morning at Starbucks. That's the only thing I've eaten in almost 72 hours.
When people say that, my wife does this all the time. She'll be like, I haven't eaten all day. And I'm like, why? Like, why do people do that? I don't understand when people say stuff like, I haven't eaten all day.
Well,
why
listen, have you ever been locked in on trying to win the Horizon League tournament? I don't know. Like, I can't speak to that experience. He didn't sleep the entire night before. He was going on like.
Why are people not sleeping and not eating?
Have you ever tried to win the Horizon League tournament?
I've never tried to win the Horizon League tournament, but I'm confident that I would eat and sleep while doing it.
You know what happens if you eat and sleep while trying to win the Horizon League tournament? You finish in second place to Greg Campy.
Maybe.
Give us your thoughts on them. You know him well, obviously, and I made sure to link the story you wrote 7 years ago. He actually very nearly died, and I wanted to get that mentioned and link in there, include that. I'm telling you, in a sport that is enriched by its colorful characters, Greg Campy is one of a kind. And what I love about him most, I think, is he has such a droll, self-deprecating personality that he says stuff. Last thing, I'll toss it back to you. He says stuff that is just hilarious, man. Like... Like I was like, hey, give me like some big names that texted you. I'll include them in the story. And then I let him know that Scott Van Pelt did a thing on it as well. And I said, hey man, listen, Van Pelt did this thing on you. I sent him the video. He goes, awesome. By the way, Wayne Tinkle just texted me. I'm like, that's great, man. Wayne Tinkle, he's just peppering. I was like, give me some names. He's like, you know, Dwayne Casey, Tom Izzo, Wayne Tinkle just texted me. He's the best, dude. And I love Wayne Tinkle, but Campy is so funny, man. He's the best.
By the way, I want the record to show that before we started this, I said, how does this sound? Are my levels okay? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
You sounded good. I don't know what changed.
I didn't touch anything. I did nothing. How are we right now?
You're good. You can go.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
You are audible, but you are not your normal level of your mic does not sound like it normally does.
I don't know what's happening.
Let's just do what Greg Campy would do and play through it.
Starve myself?
Yes, that as well.
I should starve myself like Greg Campy. I didn't even remember this story until I was watching the scene last night. And then I was like, did I write a story once about Greg Campy almost dying? Turns out I did. Quick version is Peach Jam, July 2017. And just before that, he had kidney stones, and he was going to need surgery to get a kidney stone out because they did a surgery to get one stone out. While doing that surgery, they found another stone inside the kidney. The only way to get it was to have surgery go through his back. He didn't want to do that till after the July evaluation period was done, so he tried to just tough it out. He gets to Peach Jam. He's miserable. Lots of pain. Decides he's got to fly home. Flies home. He's like sweating and he's got the chills and he's shaking. He doesn't know what to do. Gets in his hot tub to try to warm up because he thinks that's what he needs to do. It's not changing anything. Eventually he goes to the hospital. They literally have to hose him down like with not a fire hose, but picture that, to get his body temperature to drop. Sepsis had set in, and if he doesn't decide to get out of that hot tub and go to the hospital, he doesn't live. He told me at the time,
crazy man.
He told me at the time that 80% of people who were his age at the time, if they get sepsis, they die. 80%. That was it. He needed an 80% free throw shooter to miss to live. And the reason he told me the story, I didn't remember this until I went back and read it, was he was like, listen, I'm not trying to be a sympathetic figure, but I want people to understand, like, don't put off going to the hospital. Men particularly, especially men in athletics, are always like, I'll just tough it out. And that is my life, actually. Like, throughout, I get sick bad, like once a year, and I'm always like, I'll just tough it out. I almost never go to the doctor. I'm just like, I'll be okay. And his point was, if I would have done that with this thing, if I'd have said, I'll be okay, I'm just going to go to sleep, I'll wake up tomorrow and I'll be fine, he would have died. And so the message was, if you feel like something's not right, don't try to wait till tomorrow, because that might be too late. And that's a wonderful message to share. I retweeted the story last night. You wrote about him for this morning. He's getting tons of attention and he deserves it. Like you said, I don't know anybody who knows Greg Campy who doesn't like Greg Campy. It was nice seeing him. I know he said he just wants it for his players, and I want it for his players too. I liked watching him have that moment as well.
Last thing I'll say, and then we can get to the rest of the show here, is he shared with me an anecdote, and you could hear it almost in his voice. Like Campy can, he can get, you know, he's in touch with his emotional side, but he's just the way he's wired, man. It is very much like droll sarcasm, self-deprecation. But he said, like, last Wednesday, he was sitting down with one of his players and they were just talking about a few things, but they got to talking about like the league tournament and being on the precipice of it. And it was a fifth year player, Blake Lampman, who's a point guard. And he got to a point where he was like, we got to do this. Like, we got to do this. I so badly want you and Trey Townsend, the guy who had the huge game, to get to the tournament. And as he's like going through this, Blake like stops him. He's like, no, coach, like, we want to do this, but we want to do it for you. And it's for you. And the way that Campy relayed the story, he said it so directly that it almost just kind of like, blew him back, because he said, in my 40 years, I had never had a player talk to me and say something to me like that. And so it really hit him hard. So it's it's a heck of a thing. Oakland will probably be a 14 seed. And there's the great thing about the tournament, man, there's 36 amazing stories every year associated with it. This is another one. But I don't know if we'll ever see a coach ever again. I mean, Boeheim did it. Go 40 years at one school in men's Division I. He really might be the last of his kind. And he's he's an awesome, awesome, awesome dude. So congrats to him. And more and more auto bids. We got more coming tonight, but we'll get to that later in the show.
On Sunday night's episode, we suggested that Kansas might be best served by just resting Hunter Dickinson, Kevin McCullough through the Big 12 tournament in an attempt to try to be as healthy as possible for the NCAA tournament. Bill Self subsequently announced that's exactly what they're going to do. We'll get into that next. First, a word from our partners.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Dan Orlovsky, are you still a Jaden Daniels is the best quarterback available in the draft guy?
I think the three things that make it stand out for me are, number one, I think his ball placement versus man coverage is the best in the draft. Every quarterback in the NFL is accurate. He's got the best on tape. Number two, most transferable stuff to the NFL. And then I think the third thing is pocket peace.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
All right, Deadleg. Bill Self announced on Monday night during Hawk Talk, I believe, that Hunter Dickinson and Kevin McCullough are both going to be held out of the Big 12 tournament. It's unclear if they could play if they wanted to in the Big 12 tournament. He didn't get into that, but he did insist they'll be ready for the NCAA tournament, and he suggested he believes they'll be healthier than they've been in a while when the NCAA tournament starts, by letting Hunter Dickinson and Kevin McCullough rest through the Big 12 tournament. Do you approve of this message?
Do I approve of the message, of the action? I guess. I mean, we obviously talked about this very scenario on the Sunday podcast, and Kansas is going to play later here today on Wednesday. when the Big 12 tournament gets rolling again. I think Kansas is the last tip of the day, and it is weird to see a six next to that KU logo in the Big 12 tourney. I'm going to trust Bill Self and the training staff that this is the right move. And you brought this up on the show as a proper, as a likely proper course of action. And if I'm right, let me bring this up to you. I think Cincinnati is favored in this game, which is...
It's true, yes. Cincinnati's 2.5 points.
Now, listen, you're down your best offensive player and your best defensive player, and take your pick, but you know, your best two overall players, period. So on a certain level, that makes sense. Yeah, like this is going to, unless Self, you know, does what he needs to do, and just imagine Bill Self winning this Big 12 tournament without these guys. It'd be a joke if that happened. Kansas might wind up on the 4 line. We'll see where it gets sent, and it might have minor impact on the seeding. I'd actually, frankly, and I will interview the selection committee chair Sunday night on HQ. If this question isn't asked elsewhere, I will ask him. I honestly wonder how much the injuries to these two players will have any impact on Kansas' seed, because they'll get seeded with the understanding, according to Self, that they're going to play for the NCAA tournament. So maybe KU, if it were to lose to Cincinnati, that would rightfully get dinged for that loss. I think that'd be a Q2. Maybe it's a Q1, actually. But I don't know if it would be totally detrimental. I'm fascinated to see what Kansas looks like without these two players on the floor, GP. But mark me down for one win at most in the Big 12 tournament. Just hard to survive in that league, in that bracket. And the more important thing is getting yourself right once we get to next week.
I think they'll lose today. And I don't even think they care. Do they?
I mean, I assume the players getting on the floor care about winning and losing, but I can't say with 100% certainty, but big picture, I understand the point you're making. Yes.
And I think this is like not only the right thing to do, like the only smart thing to do. I don't know how many Big 12 tournaments Bill Self has won. I could look it up. I don't really care. Like, that's not the thing that people attach themselves to. How many ACC tournaments did Mike Krzyzewski win? I'm not saying they don't matter. I'm just saying
they don't matter. You don't care. You don't care about the ACC championships. It's come out the truth.
What I'm saying is that this isn't the way we score keep in GOAT conversations or any other conversations. Yeah. Conference tournament championships is not really a thing that is high on the list of accomplishments. If you get them, celebrate them. But like, it's for a program like Kansas and a coach like Bill, it's conference titles in the regular season, Final Fours, and national championship. That's it. Everything else is just stuff that happens. And so if the best way to increase your likelihood of going to another Final Four, winning another national championship, is to sacrifice the Big 12 tournament and let these guys rest, it seems obvious to me that that's what you should do. If they play next Thursday, obviously they'll play Thursday or Friday. If they play next Thursday, they'll have Dickinson and McCullough 11 days between games. Play next Friday, it'd be 12 days between games. And you can never know for sure whether Bill was being so, because he sounded way more optimistic on Hawk Talk. And maybe that's just the nature of Hawk Talk.
That's what happens. It's optimism all the time on Hawk Talk.
It might just be the nature of Hawk Talk. But he was very optimistic. Either A, because he genuinely believes Hunter Dickinson and Kevin McCullough are going to be healthy and good to go by the start of the NCAA tournament. Or B, because you have to say that to make sure the committee doesn't ding you because of a lack of availability. So I guess we'll see when they step onto the court for their round of 64 game. But, you know, I'll take him at his word. McCullough, Dickinson going to sit this out. They're combining to average more than 36 points a game, by the way. I mean, they're terrific. And so whatever happens in the Big 12 tournament happens, and then Kansas will be as healthy as it can be heading into the NCAA tournament, and we'll see where it goes from there. Looking ahead to other things on Wednesday, I want to start with something that could or could not happen. We'll get to the games that definitely will happen, but the thing that could or could not happen, that'll be the big headline, Kenny Payne at Louisville. Lost last night in the ACC tournament to North Carolina State, and then held another goofy press conference. Deadleg, it's so funny, like, the reports are like, is expected to. Of course they're expected to.
Like, And he's going to get fired today. Like, I hear.
I wrote this 3 weeks ago or 3 months ago. After Louisville loses its first game in the ACC tournament, the school is expected to fire Kenny Payne. Ooh, look at me. I got a scoop. Of course they're firing him. He's terrible. 4-28 last season, 8-24 this season, 12-52 in 2 years, finished 314th in the net last season, 214th in the net right now. He might really go down as the worst great job coach in the history of college basketball. Who has been worse at a great job and also been so ill-equipped to do it? I mean, the on-the-court stuff is just embarrassing, and then the press conferences are even worse, I would argue.
Yeah, he had seek it out if you really must. But yes, he had after the game yesterday. I mean, it led to, you know, him being asked about his future and all that kind of stuff. And then he kind of went back over, you know, why he said from the start it was going to take 3 or 4 years. We all know how you feel about that, GP. Look around, coaches that are able to change it in 1 year, et cetera, et cetera. Completely valid, fair point. And the rebuttal to Kenny Payne. He had 12 wins at a program like Louisville. It's basically, ironically, it might be him and Naismith at Kansas. Remember, he couldn't get it. Good old Jimmy couldn't get it done at KU back in the day. Invented the sport, terrible head coach. So I think so if you want good news for Kenny Payne, he's sitting there right alongside James Naismith as some of the worst coaches in the history of blue blood programs there. But yeah, it's a genuine bummer that it didn't work out, but we had this conversation a year ago. And he got another year because he is in a lot. I mean, Louisville won 4 games last year. I mean, it was a dumpster fire. And he got the second year. It's no better off. He will be. Louisville's literally flying in the air right now, going back to Louisville. It was stayed overnight in D.C. And then that process will formally take place later this afternoon. And then off we go with candidates and a search. But we'll see. We'll see how the program moves from here. Yes, you're right, though. I mean, it will, the Kenny Payne era, Parrish, it will go down in infamy, unfortunately. And it has been a weird run here, from the Patino scandals to everything that's happened. When they hire the next coach, it's going to be what, 6 different men who have led this program over a 4 year span, some 5 year, 6 year span, something like that. There's been so much change. They need stability in the worst way. That fan base is aching for it. And I do want to give Mike Rutherford, who does a very good job covering Louisville, who, you know, all this stuff is happening, and he's got a great sense of humor about this stuff, because he's chronicled on radio and for SB Nation in the past, the program that he loves all these years and throughout the season. And he said, what was this? I'm bringing it up right now. I think he said, I guess our fate is in the hands of the committee now. I guess that's where, like, the season's over. No at-large coming to Louisville. The season's done. Search begins on Wednesday. We'll see who gets the job.
They should have fired him after year one. And I'm not just saying that now. I said it after year one. Like, there are times when you can just see, like, this is a disaster. Like, I understand why they made the mistake they made. But it was very clear after 1 year, it's a mistake. You should change this now. Same thing with Tubby Smith at Memphis. I called that one after 1 year. I said they should fire him right now. And they said, well, you got to give him a second year. Okay, fine. Then do it in a year. They did it in a year. Same thing here. I swear to God, I had 50 conversations with people connected around Louisville. And I'd say, why are they not firing him after the 1 year? Well, you can't fire him after 1 year, can you? Why not? Well, you know, it's just after 1 year. Okay. Well, if he has another bad year, will you do it then? Well, of course. Okay, well, he's about to have another bad year. Here we are. And then the stuff last night, about, like, when I got the job, I said it's going to take 3 or 4 years. First off, the local media in Louisville, I saw some tweets from them last night. They were like, he didn't say that. All right? That's not what he said. I wasn't there. But local media was refuting that sentiment last night. Beyond that, it doesn't take 3 or 4 years. It's nonsense. I've gone from feeling sorry for him to, like, being embarrassed for him. Like, just totally ill-equipped in every aspect of the job. Can't coach him. Can't talk about it. Nothing. It takes 3 to 4 years. Why does Danny Sprinkle have a team at Utah State in year one a million times better than the team you have at Louisville in year two? What are we talking about?
That exact situation is what drives people around these programs at high expectations absolutely nuts.
A great coach in the era of NIL and the transfer portal can flip Louisville in a month. In a month. Mm-hmm. You need 3 to 4 years? If they hire the right guy, Louisville will be ranked in the preseason top 25 next season. If they hire the right guy.
That is right. And to that point, you know, and tracking this search, I've been told that Louisville, from an NIL standpoint, and this applies for football as well as men's basketball, this is what someone keyed into Louisville, and I would trust their information on this. He said, there has not been a situation with NIL where a staff has kind of asked for something or inquired about something and basically been told no. Hasn't happened yet. Kenny just mismanaged the roster and everything that tied to that tremendously. And so whoever next coach is going to be, and I do think the likes of Scott Drew, Dusty May, Amir Abdul-Rahim, Josh Schertz is on the list. I think those are going to be some of the targets, and there will be more for sure. The person that gets that job is going to have a war chest of NIL at their disposal. And from what I understand, Louisville is going to come. It is going to take this hire as it should. But, you know, for Cardinals fans listening that might be wondering, like, Kenny Payne just happened. Like, is my program going nowhere? My understanding is that they are going to approach this search and the hiring process and the infrastructure built around their next coach like the job that it is, a top 10 job in the country, a blue blood program, a school that should be competing in the top 10 in the NIL space to build a roster, to go into the portal, to flip. And what Parrish, what you said is absolutely correct. If Louisville hires the right coach because of what Louisville is and the NIL at its disposal, there's almost no reason why the Cardinals should not be able to build a top 25 roster heading into next season. The only thing that would prevent that is that the fact that it's been so bad the past 2 years that I can understand why you might hit some resistance, maybe about maybe getting that one extra guy in the portal here and that one extra guy in the portal there, maybe. But if you get the right guy and where we are in college athletics right now, you should be able to build a roster that brings real optimism and certainly hopes of NCAA tournament year one with your new coach.
Jerome Tang did it in 1 year at Kansas State. Danny Sprinkle did it in 1 year at Utah State. Lamont Paris has done it in 2 years at South Carolina. Kenny Payne was handed the best job available 2 years ago. And at the very least, among the power conference coaches, nobody even came close to doing as poor of a job. There was also Greg Hare, New Mexico State, that obviously didn't go so well.
Not a high major job, though.
Right, yeah. I said at the power conference level, at the high major level, it's not even close. Like he took the best job available and ran it into a place that seems actually unimaginable. Like if you would have like unimaginable, the idea that Louisville would ever finish 314th in a computer ranking of men's college basketball is actually unimaginable. If you told me, GP, we're going to let your 7-year-old run the Louisville men's basketball program for the next year, I'd say he's going to finish top 300. He's going to finish top 300. Your 7-year-old can finish top 300 with Louisville. Yes, easy. Give him an NIL. No, I'll teach him how to add. I'll teach him how to. We've been working on addition and subtraction anyway. So give me his NIL money. I'll teach. I will keep working on addition. And yes, he'll finish top 300 in the net. I'm not exaggerating. I cannot imagine anybody finishing outside of the top 300 as the head coach of the Louisville men's basketball program.
It has been really just one of the more bizarre and depressing spectacles that we've seen in college athletics recently in terms of like on the court competition, obviously. No, it's and the era is almost officially over. And then for Louisville, the waiting game will begin for Louisville fans, because all your targets are sitting head coaches. Most of them, if not potentially all of them, could be coaching in the NCAA tournament. And so that, you know, you got to wait on that. And we'll see. We'll save the majority of like the candidate stuff for, you know, I guess a different episode there. I'm genuinely interested in see who gets this job and who takes this job, because they are going to come aggressively. Dusty May is obviously involved and targeted, among other guys, at Ohio State. And if Scott Drew says no and stays at Baylor, which I could see, but I mean, if Louisville is going to come and try and like say, Scott Drew, we'll pay you $10 million, tell us no. Like it could get pretty fascinating and interesting. So yeah, this will be quite the search. I'm pretty confident that because of where Louisville is in the landscape, I'm pretty confident that Cardinals fans, when you know who your next coach is, you're going to be happy. The only one where I wonder if it leads to this spot, and I'm not even saying it won't work out, and Pat Forty made a great point on this when he wrote a story on Tuesday after Louisville got knocked out, is like, if it is Josh Schertz, he's a hot name at a mid-major right now, and we don't even know if Josh Schertz is going to coach in the tournament at Indiana State. We got to wait till Selection Sunday on that. But that would not be a proven guy. As a source, a well-connected source told me on Tuesday, he's like, you're Louisville. You got to go get a Final Four coach. And I was like, I agree. If you're Louisville, that should be your target. There's no guarantee you'll get a Final Four coach. But as Forty mentioned, you know, back in 2001 or whatever, Tom Jurich was working and working and working to get Rick Pitino, and he almost didn't have him. And Pitino almost said no. And he got Pitino. He's a big name then, and obviously it worked out. But the number two guy on that list in 2001 was not a proven coach. He's awesome now. He's a Hall of Famer. But the number two guy for Louisville more than two decades ago was Jay Wright. Right. So you can get someone who is not yet fully established at a place like this, and that coach can prove to be awesome. And I don't know if Jay Wright would have been a Hall of Famer if he had gone to Louisville, but just keep that in mind as well. If you don't get, you know, big target one, big target two, big target three.
On the same type of thing, when Memphis fired Larry Finch in the late 90s and was looking for its next head coach, they hired Tick Price. The racial tensions in the city were really high. And so the administration, I'm just saying this because I know it to be true, they felt like they had to replace Larry Finch with a minority candidate. They felt like they had to. So they really only considered minority candidates. They hired Tick Price. But do you know who was on the list? Oral Roberts, Coach Bill Self.
How about that? Yeah, there you go.
Would
Bill Self be Bill Self if he had taken it? Maybe. I don't. Probably. He's awesome coach.
He told me he probably would not have taken it. Yeah. That's what he said. But I think I remember him telling me Larry Brown was telling him that he should. If he could get it, he should take it. One of those deals. And then, you know, two years later, maybe they end up hiring John Calipari. But yeah, I read that Pat's column as well. And I sort of chuckled when I saw that at the end. Like, if they wouldn't have got Pitino, they would have hired, was it Hofstra's Jay Wright at the time?
Yeah, Jay Wright straight out of Hofstra, man. Yeah, how about that? Pretty crazy. No, yeah. That's wild stuff. I know.
So if I'm Louisville, yeah. But just if I'm Louisville, Scott Drew can do whatever he wants. I don't tell other people what to do with their lives. Oh man, I would call Chris Mack and talk to him, and be like, hey, so do you regret leaving a place where if you did just stay there, they might have put your name on the court someday? Mm-hmm. I'd be real careful about leaving well enough alone there. But again, that's his decision. He can make it. I'll be happy for him no matter what. Why not look at some of the guys who I've just said have done exactly what Louisville needs to do, which is rebuild a whole roster and program inside of a one off season. Like Jerome Tang did it at Kansas State. Call Jerome Tang. See if he wants to talk to you. I see in the chat, people throwing out Will Wade would be hilarious. Absolutely hilarious. But also work.
Have been told Will Wade will not be a candidate at Louisville, just so we're clear. But it would be hilarious.
I assumed as much, but it would be hilarious, and it would probably work. He's obviously been tremendous at McNeese. We'll let them conduct their search, but I would assume before we talk again, Kenny Payne will officially no longer be the head coach of the Louisville Cardinals. Real quick, some notable games tonight. Colgate, 6.5-point favorite over Lehigh in the Patriot League title game. CBS Sports Network, that's 7 o'clock Eastern. McNeese State, Will Wade's program, 15.5-point favorites over Nichols, Southland title game. He should be back in the NCAA tournament. Montana, 4.5-point favorite over Montana State. It's the Battle of Montana. That's Big Sky. Then Bubble, New Mexico's playing Air Force. Bubble, Kansas State plays Texas. Bubble, Villanova playing DePaul. Bubble, Wake Forest plays Notre Dame. Bubble, Providence is playing Georgetown. Providence, Georgetown again. Isn't that fun? Bubble, Utah plays Arizona State. Could be Bobby Hurley's last game with the Sun Devils.
It might. There's okay, and we are up against the GP status.
Look, I'm a Sun Devil.
Oh, where is it? I don't know where it is. Got too many buttons now. I was about to hit this one. Ah! That's the Peacock. It's not the Sun Devil. I don't know where the Sun Devil is. We got. Oh, here it is. Here it is.
I'm a Sun Devil. Look at me. I'm a Sun Devil.
All right. So that's better, by the way, than your other voice. Colgate, Colgate Lehigh, Matt Langel, he's been killing it there forever. Is someone going to give this guy a bigger job? We say it every year.
The Louisville job. Matt Langel to Louisville.
Give him at least an interview. See if we can make it happen. I don't know. We'll see on that. McNeese State, yeah. The idea that Will Wade's back in the tournament and his first year back in the sport would be something. And by the way, McNeese State, it's going to, I'd be stunned if it doesn't win the game, and we'll probably be about as trendy of a team, maybe not as trendy GP, but I mean, they can win a game in the tournament. This is the first time that Montana and Montana State have met with an auto bid on the line since 1986. So that's really cool in the Big Sky title game. And I want to give credit to the Southland and Big Sky for this. This is a recent development. These conferences used to play their championship games on Saturday, but you're the Southland and the Big Sky. They got completely lost in the glut of auto bids, and not in addition to obviously the high major stuff that happens on Saturday of Champ Week. So good on your conferences to, frankly, you know, you get a mention here at the end of a national podcast there, and we'll be watching, and you get a little more attention midweek. This was a no-brainer decision for both of those leagues. And this used to be the Patriot League, used to be the only conference that gave out an auto bid on the Wednesday of Champ Week. Good on the Southland and Big Sky. I might even recommend one other league try and do this that has its championship game on Saturday. Get it in on Tuesday or Wednesday. Give yourself a little bit more shine. Then real quick, Bubble New Mexico at Air Force. I'll say New Mexico wins. I don't think it's enough. It needs to get two. Kansas State, Texas, non-negotiable. One is definitely not enough. Has to win at least one to continue to even have a case. Nova, DePaul, not negotiable. I think Nova will win easily. DePaul, by the way, is with a loss will clinch having the worst KenPom ranking. Yes, GP, worse than Louisville. The worst KenPom ranking of any high major team in the history of KenPom. It's 315 right now. The record. No, the school we've talked about on the show. Trivia time. What school is it?
The highest.
Lowest.
I mean, the lowest ranked power conference team ever. Pitt. I think it's Pitt.
No, it's Utah. Like the first year I went to the Pac-12, it was like 302 or something like that. I think Nova will win. Wake Forest, Notre Dame, non-negotiable. Wake, I think, needs two at least as well. Providence, Georgetown. It's incredible that Providence needs multiple wins and it's got to play Ed Cooley again. And then Utah, non-negotiable, needs to win. And then we'll see on Bobby Hurley. That's a weird one where I truly feel like it's one third chance. 33-33-33. They keep him. He's fired. He leaves of his own accord. I don't know what's going to happen there. But yeah, for Wednesday, it feels like we've actually got more bubble teams in action than we normally do. It's an awesome, awesome day. I'll be in studio tonight for CBS Sports HQ. GP will be in studio starting tomorrow for CBS Sports Network. When you hear from us again, it'll be Friday morning. We will both be in New York City. We will both be in hotel rooms. We will not be in the same hotel room, but we will squeeze in a Friday morning pod no matter what and hit on whatever. The Friday morning show, the Champ Week, every year, it's the weirdest one because there's all these games that are about to happen. But rest assured, we got you covered. We'll be with you on Friday morning. That's all I got, GP.
I can't wait. I can't wait. That's all I got, too. I can't wait. This thing on?
It's on, and let me tell you, at the start of the show, before we went live, your mic sounded normal. I think it is your XLR wire or something that happened. So, don't fret, my friend. We got it done.
Well,
give me the shouts.
We'll try to do better next time. Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Terry M. F. and Teagle. He's a legend. Shouts to Huck, Larnell. Thank you guys once again for listening and watching the Ion College Basketball Podcast. If you're not subscribed, please go subscribe anywhere you subscribe to podcasts, including Apple, Spotify. More of us than there are of them. What do you think about that Jackrabbit?
I love that shirt. I love that. That's a top 15 logo in all of college athletics right there.
Jackrabbit, us or them. What do you think?
Come on. No doubt. Jackrabbit, are you kidding me? It's this us of an animal that's out there.
The us's copy the jackrabbits. You realize that, right?
Yeah, that's right. We model our game after the jackrabbits. That's right.
We learned everything we know about being a us.
The name is literally Jackrabbit, yes.
We learned everything we know about being a us from the jackrabbits. Shouts to the jackrabbits. We'll talk to you again on Friday. Till then, take care.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving non-stop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel, streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.